This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome home, Milers, and welcome back to another episode of Mickey Miles and More, a podcast where three friends talk about the Disney parks, the Disney races, and whatever else comes up. I'm Chris Eliopoulos, and with me, as always, is Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hi, Michelle.
Hello, Christopher. Tis the season.
Jolly, tis jolly.
Tis the season of finishing grading, and then I get a month off. Yay! Those jingle bells.
That's the best part. I know one of my sons came home today because his classes are pretty much done. He just has to take a couple finals virtually. The other one is done in a couple days, so he'll be home soon. So
almost over. Do I need a break? We all need a break.
I know. Speaking of breaks, let's make a break with things and talk about our other friend on the show, the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa.
Welcome, the Dean of Disney. Welcome, everybody, to the show. Hello, Chris. Hello, Dr. Michelle. How are you? This is the Dean saying good evening.
That's going to be your new nickname. You're the Dean. Dino. You're the Dean.
Dino. Everybody.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed a couple of weeks of Mike and I just vamping on certain subjects, but we're back, the three of us. And tonight we're going to talk about, first we're going to talk about the annual passes and about the information about that that has come up. We're going to talk about Genie Plus a little bit more, and then maybe even the Star Wars Hotel, some three things that have kind of not been the best of news for the Disney Corporation. Off the bat, I will say that waivers are now available for the Run Disney Marathon weekend that's coming up. So if you have not gotten your email stating to sign in, make sure that you check on the page. They laid out the map, and last time I ran, it went through ESPN Zone, or whatever it's called. I hated that area. It was just this winding, horrible area, and they got rid of it this year. So.
Oh, really? I like going around the track. It was a nice break on my knees because that was so rubbery.
I put the sidewalk thing where you were just running in like a maze inside of there. It was always annoying because it was not a lot of space. People crowded in. Always
weird. That's true.
So anyway, first up, let's talk about the fact that, Mike, I think I heard or read that they are halting any new annual passes for the Disney World pass holders, right? I don't know exactly how to go. Explain it.
So this happened a few weeks ago, and we're just catching up to this. There was an issue with the park availability, and apparently this time of year, a lot of people purchase annual passes for Christmas presents. I didn't realize that was a popular Christmas gift, and one of the problems, I think this happened about a week or two before Thanksgiving. If you looked at the park availability calendar, it was pretty much full for the week of Thanksgiving and also the last 2 weeks of December. So you think that if someone was given an annual pass and they weren't able to make a park reservation, that would not make for very good PR. I also think that there's something in the back rooms of the Disney executives that they're talking about what type of revenue they realize from annual pass holders as compared to the locals. And I think what they wanted to do is they wanted to somehow control how, even more to control how their guests navigate the park. So there was a halt put on annual passes. And on the heels of that, within the last week or so, Chris, and I think you were one of these pass holders who received a survey, an email, asking you certain questions. And I heard a little bit about it. I heard that one of the questions on the survey was to, and I don't know if you had seen any of the questions, Chris, they were asking which of the annual pass holder benefits were most valuable to you. And, you know, they went down the list of all the benefits. I don't recall all of them, but I know one of them was free parking at the parks and, you know, discounts and all that, that stuff. And so I'm trying to put these two together, the halting of annual passes and then the survey. And, you know, I just like to open that up for discussion. Michelle, do you want to chime in?
No, the first question I have is, no, when we didn't have to make the park reservations, it was almost never at capacity other than like the 4th of July and, you know, maybe New Year's Eve. So have they had, when we started to go back after, you know, the restrictions were lifted, there were limitations on the number of people in the parks. Is everything back up to capacity and the parks are still oversold with all these reservations?
I don't believe things are up to capacity, because I think that if things were back to capacity, I don't think that there would be a need to put some type of a vehicle in place to control the number of people in the parks.
I mean, like, how many of us were ever turned away because the park was at capacity before this?
Well, parks, the Walt Disney World theme parks are usually at capacity, maybe, I mean, not at capacity, but usually are experiencing a close down during the day. Usually there's only about 5 or 6 days during the year where that happens. July 4th, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, maybe Christmas Eve, maybe a few days during maybe Easter. So there's definitely an indication that the capacity, they have not raised it to 100% capacity. I don't know what it is now. They never give out official. I mean, we kind of, you know, talk to, quote, some experts who know, you know, how much capacity is usually in the parks. And I hear something like 60%, 65%, but I don't know if that's true. So to answer your question, Michelle, I don't think that they're at 100% capacity. And I think that's one of the reasons why they, you know, are trying to control the number of people in the parks. If you have an annual pass, you can make a reservation well in advance instead of someone who is relying on their reservation dates to do it. But what's kind of a flag for me is that they went through a closure last year, and then when they reopened the parks, all of a sudden a whole bunch of new policies came about. All of a sudden a whole bunch of things happened. Prices, availability, all kinds of stuff happened. Now the same thing's going on with annual passes. They were selling them, now they stopped selling them, and then right on the heels of them stopping the sales of annual passes, they send out these surveys. And that to me, it tells me I have an opinion as to why I think that's happening, and I don't have a good feeling about it. Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, no, my original thought was, here we go again, where they're gonna, it's testing the waters to shut down more perks. I feel like it's just another way to, like, what do annual pass holders really do? I mean, they're letting the locals continue to get their passes, right? Is that the case, right? So Florida residents still get in. So why, that doesn't really change capacity, because Florida residents come in all the time, unless, you know, except for the blackout dates. But I also think it might be a money thing. You know, you go to a park, you go to the parks for 7 days, you pay for a 7-day park ticket. It's probably almost as expensive as a full year's annual pass. So they're probably feeling like they're losing money on park costs. And so, hey, let's limit the amount of annual pass. I wouldn't be surprised if after this, it's like the step-by-step thing. It's going to eventually go to where they limit the amount of annual passes per year. Almost like, you know, you get season tickets to the Boston Red Sox, right? You know, there's only a certain amount of people who can go. People can have it. And I think they're going to maybe start limiting this. It just seems like there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on, or maybe even limit the benefits of the annual passes. So I don't know. That's my thought.
I have two questions.
Go ahead.
Number one, what about DVC? You know, if people are buying DVC, are they going to tell them that they can't have a DVC annual pass. And the second question is, does anybody know what percentage of visitors are annual pass holders? Because the three of us and all of our good Disney friends and probably everybody listening to this most likely has an annual pass. But if you ask the people we work with and out in the streets, or, you know, just regular people who go to Disney, they don't have an annual pass. So I wonder what percentage of visitors really would be impacted by this.
So what I'm thinking, Michelle, is that the recent reopening of Walt Disney World has had a lot of people who may not be as avid visitors as us, but are thinking, you know, who may go once a year maybe, are looking at the prices and they're doing the math and they're realizing that, you know, a 6-day or a 7-day Magic Your Way pass, or whatever we're calling it, Park Hopper pass, is pretty much more expensive than an annual pass. And why don't I just get an annual pass and maybe I can also recoup that cost through the discounts and maybe an annual pass holder special at a resort.
I'd love to know the analytics, because all the times that I've just popped into Epcot and had dinner, you know, all those different times that we go because we have an annual pass and we could go, hey, just let's watch a fireworks show or something like that. And the money that we're spending and how many people like us are spending much more money if you spread it out over the year than a 7-day park hopper person. But anyway, yeah. Do you know, anybody know about DVC?
I think that DVC is a very...
I think people are going to be really angry if they buy Disney Vacation Club and then they can't buy an annual pass.
I think that DVC is a very treasured club and they don't want to do anything to upset them. I have heard...
Disney do something to upset their guests?
Oh. Well, they're best guests, so I think the DVC owners have to be put in a special category. They're going to be most they're most frequent visitors. They are constantly offering Disney a revenue stream that I think originally Disney thought that was pretty cool. I don't know if they're thinking the same now, because I do think that people who purchased DVC back in 1990, 95, 2000, whatever, I think they're making out really well. I think those who are buying now, it's gonna take a while. So I think, Michelle, that they're probably not going to touch DVC. I can imagine the screaming if they did. I do have several friends who I've talked to over the last month who have thinking about DVC and if they want it. One person, I mean, people who our listeners would recognize their names are saying to me, I don't know if the value is there anymore. I'm thinking about selling. So I think that there are a lot of DVC people like us who are looking and seeing what's going to happen. And I think I'm going to throw a label on this. I'm going to call this the Dole Whip Syndrome. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm.
Everything goes back to the Dole Whip.
Dole Whip Syndrome. For many years, I loved the Dole Whip. And when we used to go to something called Mouse Fest and something called Reunion, we used to have a Dole Whip meet. And, you know, a bunch of my friends would meet in Adventureland and we would have Dole Whip. I remember one year, I thought, you know, boy, all these prices are going everywhere. The prices are going up, but the Dole Whip pretty much stayed the same. Until I realized that I was getting less for the same price. So if the Dole Whip was costing, let's say, $2.95, it was still costing $2.95, but I was not getting as much. It was being reduced by 20%. So what I think was going through the minds of whoever made the decision was that we're not going to have them spend more. We're going to save money this way. We're going to give them less. But they're not going to realize it because it was so subtle that I didn't notice it. So when I think about the annual passes, I think the same thing's going to happen. I think they're looking at all the the benefits, Chris. And I think they're saying, well, we're either going to increase the annual pass again, or we're going to reduce the benefits. But in either case, the goal is to save money, to increase the profit margin. And I think that's why they asked all these questions as to which of these benefits do you value the most and which one do you value the least.
And isn't really that Dole Whip syndrome, isn't that the philosophy that was sort of revealed at the shareholders meeting when they were talking about charging the same price for less food? And
one
of the Disney employees said, well, it's okay because people could stand to lose some weight.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a recurring theme with them over the last 10 years. And yeah. I think that's a way of them subtly improving their bottom line without hammering their guests over the head with, boom, we're going to increase the price of a Dole Whip by 20%. No, we're not. But we're going to reduce the Dole Whip that you get in, so and it's up by 20%.
A teaspoon. You're handed a spoon with a dollop of Dole Whip.
So you know, I've been thinking what benefits that we as annual pass holders really value. And I don't know which ones they would take away. I mean, there are reasons why a company would promote a large portion of their guests to purchase an annual pass, and they need to show those. They need to put a list of carrots, if you will, and that would make them to buy it. And I don't know what they would take away. If they take away discounts.
Like, what are your top three things, Chris, that you like about your annual pass?
Obviously, it's the 10% off on food and tchotchkes and stuff like that.
See, that means nothing to me. I don't really care about that.
Well, look, top things. I mean, really, it's for me, the reason I was getting the annual pass was just because we were going there enough that, you know, it goes way back to the old days when we kind of said, what's the cutoff between buying park hoppers versus an annual pass in the amount of days you go? And we were going enough days that it made more sense to get the annual pass and save money. That was really the number one reason why we were doing it. I don't drive a car, so I'm not getting parking passes. I don't even know what half the benefits are. I mean, there used to be a benefit if you were an annual pass holder, you could get in, you could sign up for the Run Disney races a week early. They stopped that. So I really, there's nothing. I mean, to be honest with you, we've had this discussion. I know when they announced this cutback on, or the freeze on the annual passes, they said that and if you already have an annual pass, you can renew it. So it's available for that. But we've sort of made the decision that we're not going to renew our annual passes anyway, because we feel like based on everything that's going on, we're going to go less. The kids are older, but also just, you know, it's that the Dole Whip syndrome. It's they're providing less, charging more. And it's just a short-term way of making money versus the original idea of creating passionate guests who want to come back over and over again many, many years. I mean, the reason I love Disney is because my parents took me to Disney when I was a kid. It's that you fall in love with that stuff. And at this point, you know, there's so much less. Like, you know, you lose all the little pluses that they've been doing. So I think we've made the decision that we're going to allow our annual passes to roll out and be done with them. So I don't know about what you guys, I don't know if you have any other friends that are thinking similarly, but you know, I figure why get an annual pass when I'm not going to use it?
It makes sense. What's your top three reasons for having one?
Well, you know, let me preface that by saying there are different groups of annual pass holders. If I lived in the greater Orlando area and I wasn't a DVC owner, the annual pass would have greater value to me, because that would mean that at any day I could go to one of the theme parks and I could park in the parking lot without paying $25 or $30, and I could get a discount on gifts, merchandise, and meals, certain meals, and I would reap, you know, more benefits than if I am a DVC.
That's a relatively new perk. That wasn't a perk for a long time.
Which one?
AP, getting a discount on meals and merchandise. It was out in Disneyland if you were Anna Pass, but not in World.
I recall it was always 10%, and it was always a 10% discount on lunches at Epcot. They've changed it. They broadened it. I agree with you. They broadened it. If I had to, I think as a DVC owner or as a someone who is not local, I think it takes on a different type of value. I think that the discounts are number one for me. I think that the discounts make me think more seriously about purchasing something than if they didn't have the discounts. I'll tell you right now, if they took the discounts off the annual pass, I think that would kill a revenue stream. By having that discount, I think it kind of motivates people to purchase more merchandise. I think that the one perk that will not go will be the free parking. I think that's solid. That will stay.
They're charging DVC people to park in the resorts.
In the resorts, but not in the. But not in the.
I don't think it's solid.
If you did not have an annual pass. If you did not have an annual pass, wait a minute. If you stay on the property, you don't pay the parking at the theme park. You pay at the resort.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's funny because I don't buy a lot of Disney stuff. I don't buy shirts. And the most important thing to me is I can just pop in the park whenever I want to. But now
you can't.
Now, the other thing, too, is that to fly from New Hampshire to Orlando is now double the cost than it was before the pandemic.
Wow.
It is $600 to fly for one person. To Orlando. It used to be 300, so that's going to limit a lot of trips too.
Yeah. I mean, if I was living in Florida, I would definitely keep the annual pass as opposed to the Florida resident pass, because then, I would. We would go run in and out, have dinner one night or something, or, you know, go in whenever, and we'd probably be there more often. But, I was looking. I mean, we used to get annual discount on rooms and stuff, like Becky, who's been always planning our trips, I haven't had an annual pass holder rate pop up. It's always been sort of like their new rates, whatever, when something like they're like, okay, we're not selling out of this hotel, let's lower the rates, and and they're random. So
I think there's a reason why that has happened, Chris, and that is that there used to be this I remember Jim Hill, I think, was one of the first people who coined this phrase of putting heads in the beds.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Walt Disney World wanted to do is they wanted to try to have a consistent flow of people over the course of the year. And I think one of the reasons why the Run Disney brand was expanded was to have that, so that you wouldn't have the slow times in February, or you wouldn't have the slow times in September, October. Well, now if you notice the Food and Wine Festival, it's almost year round. So they don't have the need to draw people with offerings of 20, 30, 40%. There used to be, they used to have something called value season. And I always remember long time ago talking about this right around August 17th. That's when the rack rates would change. That's when you would see annual pass holder discounts. That's when you would see free dining, right between the middle of August to probably the first week in October. That was when you could see them. I agree with you. I don't see them anymore. So I don't know what that means. Does that mean that those types of perks are going to be taken off the annual pass holder list of benefits? I don't know. It's really an interesting kind of thing that's going on, and we're all curious to see what
Well,
Scrooge.
I was just reading. DVC cannot buy annual passes right now.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. See, I'm telling you, like, just the gut feeling I'm getting lately is that this is just a step in the direction of getting rid of annual passes, or limiting them, or doing something so that they make more money by having people come down and pay full rates to get in the parks. You know, because here's the thing, and I'll say this over and over again: we all can sit and complain about this stuff, but everybody complained about Genie Plus and paying the rates. Everybody complained about the rates going over $100 a day, and yet everybody still goes. Everybody still pays it, and so, you know, it's sort of like, you're willing to do it, then that's it. We're done. Like, you can't fight it. Then they're going to keep doing it until it stops. So I think this is just a fishing expedition to see how things go. Like, will people still go to the parks if they don't have annual passes, you know? So
Michelle, earlier you asked how many annual pass holders there were. I don't know. This is going to sound a little self-serving, but I won a contest, Happiest Pass Holder on Earth contest. And I remember talking with Greg Urbar in Soho, New York City. And I asked him, I said, how many annual pass holders are there? And I don't recall, this was about 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, maybe 15 years ago. I don't recall exactly how many, but I want to say it was in the hundreds of thousands back then. So who knows how much it is now, and maybe there is a point in which, you know, it's a what do they call that, diminishing returns, point of diminishing returns, where it's not paying off for them, and now it's a problem, and they need to do something about it. I don't think that not offering annual passes are going to be the thing, because, and this is a transition, because Universal Studios has it. And when the annual passes, I don't know, Chris, if you saw this, Michelle, I think we might have shared this. When Disney put a halt on the annual passes, Universal Studios came out with a marketing thing, said, we love our annual pass holders. And they just took this and they ran with it. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is that Universal Studios recently asked their pass holders, they sent out a survey asking their pass holders questions about Disney, Genie, and Genie Plus, and the Lightning Lane. And I thought that was very interesting. So you have this kind of dynamic going on between those two companies, Universal and Disney. And I think that competition is going to, I think that is going to help us as annual pass holders, because Disney doesn't want to say, well, we don't have annual passes, even though, you know, Universal does. But I'd like to just give you guys one of the questions that Universal asked their annual pass holders regarding Disney and Genie Plus. The question went like this: why do you think Disney implemented the Genie Plus and Lightning Lane systems? And they said, select all that apply. So here are the things that they said. Do you think they did that to control guest movement through the parks? I think so. Encourage guests to stay on site, improve guest experience, minimize need to plan ahead, spread out crowds, make money, alleviate long waits to limit demand for quick access lines, or none of the above? It's really interesting because a lot of people are trying to figure that out. I really think it's basically they want to control movement. They want to dictate, like you had mentioned many times, Chris, with some people would say to you, you know, they've been told to go here, they've been told to go there. I have friends who texted me while they were down there. It's like, I'm not going to let them tell me how to navigate the parks.
Yeah, it's definitely turning into a full on. You need to plan every minute of your vacation. Right. And I mean, I get that part. I like I said, I have a nasty feeling that it's just like removing like the different perks, like at Epcot. You know, they get rid of the musicians and they kind of just pipe in, you know, where they bring in some wood choppers or something. You know, like, it's like, what?
have against wood choppers?
Well, it was just sort of like, I want to hear a band. I don't want to like watch guys chop wood. If I want, you know, I'm not paying money to watch people chop wood. You know, right? Weren't they doing that in Canada for a while? I don't know, but
yeah, it's yeah, they were. They're absolutely doing that. I don't. I think that's really direct as a researcher, somebody who works with the research all the time. I think that, you know.
Yeah,
you're very direct. I love it. I really love it. Yeah. We're not like skirting around the issue. We're going to just ask about our competition.
Why not?
I think it's pretty cheeky.
Well, why not? I mean, look.
But effective.
But, you know, what it says, though, is that the Universal Company is seeing a mistake being made. And they're calling them out on it. So, you want to take something? You got something else, Mike?
So I'm looking at the survey, Chris, and here's another one.
Oh, boy.
One of the next questions asked by Universal Orlando was targeted towards the guest experience and the previous Disney Fast Pass system, Fast Pass Plus, that used to be in place at Disney World. Here you go. Here's the question. Which of the following, if any, describe your thoughts on using the Fast Pass Plus system? Select all that apply. My experience in park benefited from the Fast Pass Plus system. I stayed at a Disney or partner hotel specifically for the early Fast Pass Plus booking window. Standby lines took longer due to priority of Fast Pass access. Booking Fast Passes ahead of time got me excited for the trip. It was stressful using the Fast Pass Plus system on none of the above.
These are the questions Disney should be asking.
Yeah, and this is Universal. So, wow, I would love to be a fly on the wall when someone in control in Walt Disney World was finding out about this and thinking, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? It's just
it's clear why they're doing
so they're going to be gun shy because of this. They're going to be gun shy about doing anything because they know that whatever they do, Universal is going to pounce on Disney. And I can tell you firsthand knowledge, when I've been at Universal with Becky and they have rolled out the red carpet to her.
To all travel agents.
To all travel. But I remember going in there when
Harry Potter
first opened, and boy, I mean, they closed the park. They opened up the streets were just filled with all kinds of food and drink and everything. And we want to do whatever we can to, you know, bring your guests. So Universal is very much an aggressive entertainment system. And I think Disney has become a little passive. So it'll be really interesting to see moving forward what the next 6 months are going to bring. This is becoming very interesting to watch this. And I'm sure Wall Street's looking at
it,
too.
I was just thinking, Mike, when you were talking about that I'm just going to speak for myself. And just people I know and my family. It just seems like in the past 2 years, we just want like normal, regular, don't rock the boat. Just like make it easy for us. I try to do that to my students. My students are so stressed out. Whatever I can do to make it easy for you. And it's like every day there's Disney news that stresses me out. And you're changing it. We're changing it again. Oh, guess what? We're changing it again. It's like, why? Why are they doing this? I mean, I know the reason why, but it just like takes my loyalty takes a hit because I just want like some normal, you know, something that I understand. We can't even explain any of this because it changes before we can get our head around it and talk about
it. You're absolutely right.
Feels like they're taking away that whole thought of they have guests. We're just now customers that they have to march through the parks. It's not a vacation anymore. It's a factory, and we've got to go through the assembly line, get them in here, get them over there, move them over here, get as much money and get them out, you know, and bring in the next.
Yeah.
Wash, moving, win, rinse, repeat.
They're moving a very important part of what a vacation should be, and that spontaneity.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, you know, they just added the Genie Plus system to Disneyland. And I think on the first day it collapsed, and I think the system in Disney World went down as well, which was apparently a nightmare. Like apparently it sounded like, you know, they were issuing people refunds or trying to do something, and just sounded like a total nightmare. And, you know, it just goes to show you, like, I mean, those people who took their vacations probably had a day ruined, and they're not going to get their money back on the park visit, you know, that ticket price. So
yeah, that hotel room that they bought,
Was that 2 days ago, Chris?
I know it was this week. I can't remember the exact day. My life is too stressed and busy to remember.
Because that happened on Tuesday at Walt Disney World, too. And I'm wondering if the Genie Plus system is operating off the same series of servers, which would mean if the Walt Disney World portion goes down, the Disneyland portion goes down. But
well, that would be an interesting development, because it's always been separate, completely separate, the way they do things. With their technology,
maybe they're trying to like the
Imagineers moving there, and you know, maybe they're trying to like,
I think everything, right? Homogenizing all of the mark, the shirts and the thing, like nothing is unique to the parks anymore. It's sort of like a universal brand. It's I don't know. You know, we were saying this right before. So my agent loves to go to Disneyland. So we were talking about, and she's got her whatever the annual pass is. And I was trying to tell her that, well, you know, they're going to have the Genie Plus there now, and you're going to have to deal with it. And she's like, oh, that's great. I'll just deal with it. And like, so many lay people don't understand what this means. And I was trying to explain it this way, which is, it just seems so bizarre to me that people do this. So you have to pay $15 to get your Genie Plus. So you get a bunch of attractions that you can go on. Now, of course, first thing in the morning, everybody's going to try and go for the heaviest attractions, right? So you're gonna go to the Space Mountains, the, you know, all those things,
Indiana Jones,
right? And what happens is they go so quick, by the time you get to it, it's like a 4 o'clock reservation. Well, the problem is you can't make any reservations on any other attractions until that first one goes,
right?
So you're stuck now paying $15 to wait till 4 o'clock to get onto Indiana Jones, or you can start picking out some of the lesser rides earlier on with the fear that passes will run out by the end of the day for the heavy attraction, so you wind up missing those. So it's sort of like you're getting less than, you know, like you're paying more money and getting less. It seems like, you know, the Dole Whip, what is it, scenario? Dole Whip syndrome?
Isn't just waiting in the regular line the least stressful option?
That's the thing. It's the old trick. Get there early.
Get in the park. Yeah.
Get in there early, you know, wake up the kids early, run to the parks early, go to rope drop, go to see the attractions you want to see really quick, and then relax the rest of the day going here and there, wherever you want to go. And but she was just like, wait, what do you have to do now? Like, you know, and I think that's another problem is the confusion of it all. I mean, we talk about ease and spontaneity, but it's also just it's like a learning curve. You have to learn how to go on vacation at Disney. I mean, we used to, you know, have to explain to people how to, you know, put in your dining ahead of time because you're not going to get in, and make sure that you make the, you know,
what a fast pass was,
right? But now it's like, now you have to get park, you know, your reservations, you have to make your dining reservations, you have to make sure that your Genie Plus is set, you have to know to get there early enough, you know, you have to be at the, you know, I don't even know if you have to be at the park anymore to get like the lightning lane for, you know, like Rise of the Resistance or anything like that. I'm confused. And with the people who are like so into it are confused. I can't imagine what it's like for people, you know, who are going for that one out of every 5 year trip. So I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
And we speak English. I mean,
I know you have people from other countries.
I work a lot
coming
with my students about how to teach science to people who are learning English. Can you imagine trying to navigate a Disney park experience if English was not your first language?
I mean, I remember being on one of the buses at one point a number of years ago, and there was a family of three there, and who were obviously not from this country, and English was not their first language, and they were just so confused by the bus system. They didn't know where to go, and they were like asking, like, they just jumped on the bus hoping that it was going to go where they wanted to go. And I was like, okay, what you're going to do. You know, I had to kind of guide them, and they felt so much better. You could tell, you could see the, like the weight lift off them, but you know, it's hard. This stuff is hard. And I don't know why they're making it harder on people.
And there's no translation app that has a Genie Plus and Lightning Lane on it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But so, and then speaking of like sort of bait and switching, you know, in terms of what you get versus the money that you spend, this past week, Disney released a video introducing the new Star Wars hotel, the Halcyon ship experience, which is going to be like a 2-day experience. The rates are for anywhere from like $3,000 to $6,000 for a 2-day visit, but it's not even a full 2 days. Like, you check in, you go.
Say that again. $5,000?
Yeah, it's what, like, it's three to six, depending on how many people are in your party, I believe.
The more that, more than a cruise. I know you're not interested in a cruise.
It's a land cruise, yeah. They're calling it, I think. Yeah. So what they do is you check in. Say you check in on a Monday morning. You have that day into the night. You have the full next day, but then you're out the following morning. So it's really like a one full day and then most of another day.
So like when you say check in, is it like our resorts at Walt Disney World where it means your room isn't ready until 4 p.m.?
Yeah. I would think this is a special experience. So they probably have people ready. Like, I thought it was only like weekends that were doing this hotel at first. I don't quote me on that one. But anyway, what they did is they had the head of the production of the hotel and an actor from some TV show, and they walk through the halls of this hotel, and they showed the bridge, and they showed this lounge and a lounge singer, and it was absolutely cringeworthy. The ship, the hallways looked like, hey, welcome to generic Starship. You know, it was really not Star Wars like at all. The bridge, the same thing. It just did not look anything like a Star Wars location. And then there's this weird moment where the actor goes sneaking into the bar, and there's people in the bar, and this singer comes out dressed as like a Twi'lek, which is like the one with the big elephant tusks on their head or whatever. And she sings like this really cringeworthy song. And he's just like so excited and so, and it was as bad, if not worse, than the Star Wars Christmas special or holiday special, if you've ever seen that. It was that cringeworthy. And apparently the reaction was so devastatingly bad, they pulled the video from all of their, like from YouTube, from all of their social media. Of course, people still were able to post it, repost it. And then they showed a picture and a discussion of the new captain of the ship, who's just some blue lady who looks, you know, weird. And everybody was saying it looks like Kathleen Kennedy, who is the head of Lucasfilm these days. But I also been hearing that a lot of people are canceling their trips after seeing the video and seeing all this stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes of this. I can't wait to see what it actually looks like in person. I'm hoping when, you know, Becky goes in there, she'll take some pictures for me so I can see. But it should be interesting. I'm sure you guys are not going to go see this no matter what anyway. No interest?
No.
I'd rather go on a cruise.
It's funny, Chris, because that's one of several kind of things that are going on that they have, you know, they put together this media blitz of all these new things going on, and then all of a sudden they have to step back because of problems. Yeah. There was an issue with the Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster ride. There was a preview, and they had to change some of the wording because of audio animatronic issues. Give you an example. The original edition of the article said this, and listen very closely. Kicking off with a backward launch, the fast-paced attraction will rocket riders through time and space and into the largest, quote, show building, close quote, on the property, complete with animatronics, digital media, and the James Gunn-directed series signature soundtrack of pop rock hits, all in the name of amping up the same energy and excitement from the films. But they had to revise that article. And what they took out is the phrase complete with animatronics. So I think there's an issue with the animatronics. Now, why would they take it out if they still are focused on providing that element within that ride, within the roller coaster ride? So I think that what's happening, and on the heels of what you're saying, that maybe a lot of this stuff is being hyped up too much. Do you guys recall there were artist renditions around World Showcase Lagoon of Harmonious. And then just a week or two before Harmonious came out, they wiped out all those artist rendition because of things like the water screens looked so much better on the artist rendition than it would in real life. And there were a lot of other things. So I'm beginning to think that there's an issue with the marketing arm of Walt Disney World, that they're not being realistic and truthful to their clientele. And that's going to be a problem, because if you stop making promises and you can't deliver, then people are not going to pay any attention to what you're trying to sell.
So I agree, but charging $5,000 for a almost two-night hotel seems to be, you know, for a mediocre experience, seems to be more than just marketing. So, Chris, based on what you heard, is there a price you would pay?
No, I have no, I had no interest in going.
1,000.
No, you know, I'll tell you why. Because it's also this kind of, it's so funny, because I just watched Hawkeye again this week, and they make fun of the LARPers. I don't know if you know what the LARPing is, live action role playing. So people dress up. It's almost like cosplay. Cringe. I like, they want you to dress up like in Star Wars clothes and walk around. And
I saw that episode. Now I'm remembering.
And they want to do this in the hotel, where it's sort of like you have to run the ship and, you know, you have to pretend. Like, I'm not into that. So like when I'm in the Star Wars land, you know, and they have the characters running around pretending they're really in Star Wars, and like, do you know any rebels? And I'm like, I just can't go for this one. I'm not, you know. And so I have no interest in going. I had no interest in going. I was hoping that at least it would really be like being in Star Wars. Like, I Rise of the Resistance, whatever you may think of it, it's one of the only attractions I felt like I was in the movies. And I love that about it. Like, when you get into that scene with the AT-ATs, like, you're just like, oh, wow, I am really in this movie, in this land. I was hoping that I might have gone just and been like, I'm not doing that stuff, but let me see the hotel. I absolutely have no interest at all. Even if it was the price of the regular hotels, I don't know if I would just go. I mean, looking at it from what I saw in the video, it's like, it looks like Space 220, right? It looks like that new restaurant. And it's like, well, I'm going to go have dinner there. It'll be a lot less expensive. So, but...
Well, all right, it's going to be interesting. Any hotel experience that's $5,000. I mean, I don't run in those circles, but I cannot tell you in my time on Earth that I've experienced or heard about any experiences at the best hotels in Boston or, you know, other places I've been that are that much money.
I think right around the corner, I'm waiting to hear what they're going to blitz us with when it comes to Star Wars weekends. Because this is going to be 2022, will be the first May in which Galaxy's Edge will be open to the public. And so they must have something planned to generate some type of revenue for Star Wars weekend. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. They're not doing the race, so that's that.
Oh, yeah.
But, all right. Well, we've blabbed on long enough, so... This is going to wrap it up for this episode of Mickey Miles and More. If you want to reach out to us, send a message to us on Twitter at Mickey Miles Pod. For Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean, the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.